We want to bring you a medical alert about a very popular antibiotic, Z-Pak.
Here's a Z-Pak, Phil.
Fuck.
I take the Z-Pak, I can't sleep. I take the Z-Pak, I shit my pants in the ring. Z-Pak, full-blown staph infection. Full-blown staph infection. Motherfucker, I've been on antibiotics since November.
Doc, give me a Z-Pak.
What the fuck?
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly.
Welcome to episode 358 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, December 7th, 2014. I am the Solid Monster. You can listen to this podcast each and every Sunday on thesolidmonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, or iTunes. Yes, I'm going to talk about CM Punk. This fucker is starting to get on my nerves. He keeps blowing up my podcast rundowns after I'm done working on them. This is becoming a bad habit. But before we get to that, I just have to mention that for those of you who don't know, I made the announcement on Twitter earlier in the week. I will be appearing again on Aubrey Sitterson's Straight Shoot podcast this Monday, live after Monday Night Raw goes off the air. Head over to his website, aubreysitterson.com. He'll have all the details there. It'll be a live Google Hangout, so the video link will be there. All the information you need. I was on Aubrey's show a couple months ago. It was a lot of fun. I know a lot of you guys checked it out, had differing opinions on it, as Aubrey and I do. We do not agree on everything. And some things we actually disagree on quite a bit. So that can make for an interesting discussion coming out of the Slammy show on Monday night. So if you're interested, if you're up late, you want to check it out live after Raw Monday night, you can head on over there. I will be his guest on the show. It will be archived, so you don't have to stay up late to watch it if you don't want to. It'll be on YouTube and in MP3 form the very next day. So I just wanted to mention that here up front. I also want to mention our Audible link, which a lot of you have taken advantage of recently, and I want to thank you for that. We have a great deal going with them. If you use our custom URL, audibletrial.com/solidmonster, you can sign up, get yourself a free 30-day trial of the Audible service. It's a great service, over 150,000 audiobook titles to choose from, wrestling, nonfiction, I mean, any kind of book you may be interested in. And when you sign up, you get one free audiobook. Now, whether you stick with the trial all the way through, or if you cancel, it doesn't matter. You get to keep the book. It's a free audiobook, and a lot of you have cashed in and have gotten Chris Jericho's new book, The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea, which I did a full review on up on our YouTube channel. So I know a lot of you guys have downloaded Jericho's book. Steve Austin, of course, has his book, The Stone Cold Truth, which is actually narrated by himself. You can get that as your free book. I also want to mention another wrestling book that I was not aware of is up in the store, but it is, and I would urge you to check it out, and why not use our URL to get it, is Terry Funk's book, his biography, More Than Just Hardcore, which actually looks really cool. So if you're a Terry Funk fan, if you want to know more about his life and his career, if you're a fan of the Funker, use our Audible URL, audibletrial.com/solidmonster. Get your free book, and you can get Terry Funk's book for free. Sounds like a hell of a deal. And thank you to everybody who has taken advantage of that. We had a big month in November. I want to end the year on a high note and have a big December as well, so get on that. I've posted a ton of new audio content over the last 2 weeks or so, more audio than I have in any two-week span of my life, between the podcast itself, our YouTube channel, and a lot of you have shown your appreciation for that, you know, for example, by making a PayPal donation. That is still the most direct way to show your support for the show And the fact that, look, you would part with your dollars or whatever currency, whatever part of the world you may be in, is not lost on me. I don't take that lightly. That means a lot to me. And with that, we have a lot of PayPal shout-outs to get to here, a lot of wrestling nicknames I've doled out. If you want your own, make a donation on thesolemonster.com. Want to give a shout-out to Ready to Rumble, Robert Castaneda. Thank you, brother. Chuck Lunatic Lentz. Chuck's been a big supporter of the show this year. The Reflection of Perfection, Abraham Lara. Razorblade Trevor Johnson. Eugene Crazy Eyes Morgan. Tori All I Do Is Win Johansson. The Australian Ass Kicker, Anthony Patty. Brass Tacks Elliot Johnson. Keith the Conqueror Krajnik. The Scottish Assassin, Colin Kayer. Ravishing Rob Mace. Fight Master Frederick Arnott. I hope it's not Arnaud. Wasn't quite sure how to pronounce it. So I'll pronounce it both ways. Frederick Arnaud, Frederick Arnott. Thank you, you are the Fight Master. The Chairman, Charles Green. Cutthroat Charlie McIntyre. Terry Bad Attitude Altman. Payday Patrick Felker. Know-it-all Nick Settles. Last Man Standing, Sean Tobin. Extraordinary Xavier Hacking. And the website Warlord, Michael Shalik. How's that for a nickname? Thank you to everybody who made a donation. Again, you can do so on thesolemonster.com if you like. I want to mention the Ring of Honor Final Battle rundown. There is a Ring of Honor pay-per-view tonight. I will be actually leaving here in just a few hours to head over to Terminal 5 here in New York City. It's a dance club. It's the very first time they're running that venue. I guess they were priced out of the Manhattan Center, so they're heading over to Terminal 5. I will be there live with Brian Blade. Looking forward to it very much. We'll be in the third row, so I don't know if you'll see us, but if you do, let me know. Tweet me. Here's the rundown for the card tonight. It is a main event, Fight Without Honor, for the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship. Jay Briscoe, the reigning champion, defending against Adam Cole. Ring of Honor World Tag Team Championship match, Red Dragon, defending against the Time Splitters, Alex Shelley and Kushida. Ring of Honor television title on the line, Jay Lethal, defending against Reborn Matt Sydal, the former Evan Bourne from WWE. Six-man tag team match, the Young Bucks and ACH take on The Addiction and Cedric Alexander. Michael Elgin faces Tommaso Ciampa. Grudge match between R.D. Evans and Moose, the former NFL player turned wrestler. And in a match pitting mentor against the student, Roderick Strong will go one-on-one with Adam Page, who will have B.J. Whitmer and Jimmy Jacobs in his corner. So that is the rundown for tonight's Ring of Honor card. I am very much looking forward to the show, and I will have live thoughts on the Sound Off next week. And again, look for us. We'll be in the third row. So let's talk about this CM Punk stuff, shall we? Last night, the big news coming out of UFC 181, if you were a wrestling fan, obviously if you're a fight fan, from what I understand, there were some real kick-ass fights last night. But the big story was the announcement that CM Punk, Phil Brooks, has officially signed a multi-fight contract with UFC, and he will compete in UFC. He'll debut sometime in 2015, not sure when. It could be at least 6 months, maybe longer away, so he's not fighting anytime soon, but at some point, probably in the second half of next year, the plan is for CM Punk to step into the octagon for the very first time. They made the announcement with Joe Rogan and Punk, who was there. He had AJ Lee with him. Punk says he is likely to fight at middleweight, maybe at welterweight, but definitely not light heavyweight, so he's looking at somewhere in that 155 to 185 pound range. I think in the post-fight scrum after the show last night, he was doing media interviews, and he said he was looking at 185, so that's kind of what he's got in mind. He said he's 100% committed to this. This is his new career. He's either going to kick ass or get his ass kicked. He'll make an announcement soon about a training camp. Look, I'm happy for the guy. He seemed legitimately happy. He was all smiles. He's all in on this. He's had an interest in MMA for a long, long time. He's been training under the Gracies for a long time now, doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. There's videos on YouTube of him rolling around, I think, with Henner. So this is not something that is new to him. But at the same time, the dude's 36 years old with a body that has been beaten to shit by years of pro wrestling. I'm not sure, personally, how smart it is for a guy who has admitted to having at least a dozen concussions in his lifetime to be stepping into the octagon, but it's his life. He can do with it what he wants. And that's his prerogative. I can't hate on the guy for doing what he wants to do. He's got more balls than most. And I throw Kurt Angle in that category too. Now, maybe if Kurt Angle was a little younger and a little healthier and wasn't so beat up, maybe he would have made the jump to UFC. But Dana White has said, you know, he took Kurt seriously many, many years ago when Kurt said he wanted to come over and do some fighting after he left WWE. And I think they even had gotten to the medical phase. Now, according to Dana White, Angle couldn't pass a medical physical. Angle says something differently. So it's all a matter of who you believe. I probably would believe Dana White over Kurt Angle in that situation. But at the end of the day, Kurt blew so much smoke up people's asses for years about how he's going to come to UFC. He's serious about this. He wants to fight. And he never did. And I don't want to sit here and say Kurt Angle didn't have the balls, because Kurt Angle's a lot tougher than I am. But at the same time, he was blowing smoke. He never had, you know, he never had the gumption to actually say, okay, I'm going to really do this. CM Punk did. And if he goes in there and he gets his ass kicked, which I think there's a very good chance that's going to happen, then it happens. But I give the guy a lot of credit for actually going through with this. I don't think this ends well for him. That's my view on this. But for Dana White and the UFC, it's a brilliant move. I mean, if I was Dana White, I would have done the exact same thing. There is no pro wrestler in the world right now that has as much buzz around him as CM Punk, and now it's gone up tenfold. You know, you got Bellator, if you're UFC, breathing down your neck right now. There's more of a, you know, the old Monday Night War back and forth with WWE and WCW. There's more of that in MMA right now than there is in pro wrestling. So they've got Bellator breathing down their neck. This now creates a huge buzz that the UFC can badly use right now. That first Punk fight, which I would have to think will be on a pay-per-view, but who knows, maybe it'll be on Fox, that's going to do huge business. Huge business. Are you kidding me? I mean, these guys are in the business of making money, so they're going to do that with Punk in spades, at least on that first fight. Now, if he gets his ass knocked out and embarrassed, I don't know that there'll be much money in a second CM Punk fight, although, according to him, it's a multi-fight contract. But in that first fight, they're going to make tons of money, and Punk is going to make tons of money. It's the same dynamic with Brock Lesnar. You know, the MMA fans who absolutely hate the idea of a pro wrestler coming into their world are going to pay money to see this guy destroyed. And pro wrestling fans are going to pay money either to see him win, or they'll pay money just out of curiosity to see him fight, whether they like the guy or not. I have no idea who you would match him up with. I consider myself more of a casual MMA fan. I don't proclaim to be a hardcore MMA fan. I know the names of all the fighters. I don't. And I have no idea who they would match this guy up with. My guess is it would be another dude fighting for the first time. Otherwise, they'll just feed him some kind of scrub. Kind of like they did at first. You know, Bobby Lashley. Bobby Lashley's had a couple of Bellator fights now. I wouldn't, you know, they seem to be going up a little bit more in experience level, his opponents each time. They'll put him in there with a scrub the first time. They have to. Anybody with real experience is going to kill him. He's going to kill him. And they know that. And I said this on Twitter. If it wasn't for weight classes, can you imagine the business that UFC would do for a Brock Lesnar CM Punk fight? It would be an absolute slaughter. But it'd be a slaughter worth every bit of a million buys on pay-per-view. It's too bad we can't see it. I would pay to see it. But that's not going to happen. So, good for Punk. You know, I'm sure Vince McMahon is not bothered by this at all. No sweat off his back. After all, UFC isn't competition to WWE. Isn't that right, Vince? Now, if only Doc Amon had cut that thing out of Punk's back when he asked him to and didn't feed him full of Z-Packs, none of this would have happened. But as fate turned out, it all led CM Punk to the Octagon, so we'll see how he does next year. But obviously the internet blew up last night. That was the big news. It was a big surprise. People did not know that the deal was done. There have been rumors about it for a while. I don't think people honestly expected this to happen. The fact that it not only happened, but the announcement happened so quickly. Apparently the deal was done like a week ago. That came as a shock to a lot of people. And it's funny too, because I know Punk, I watched again the media scrum he did when the show was over. And he was sitting at the table and they were asking him questions at the post-fight press conference. And, you know, he mentioned his wife, AJ, was there with him, and he even admitted, my wife is not thrilled about this. I would think not. You know, CM Punk, hey, Brock Lesnar didn't even come out of MMA unscathed. That scar you see on Brock's face was from one of his fights. Had his face split open. CM Punk may be coming out of this with more than just a few scars. If I were AJ Lee, I wouldn't feel too happy about this either. but he seems happy. We'll see if he's still happy after his first fight. I want to mention the Sound Off Extra review I did of the Austin McMahon podcast, because I'm not going to get into it here other than to say it was awesome. It was excellent. It's well worth taking an hour and 15 minutes of your day to go watch it if you did not. And I would watch the video of it. Austin's probably going to put the audio up on Podcast One this week. I don't know if there'll be more that we didn't see, if there's like bonus audio, but do yourself a favor, if you have a network subscription, watch it on the network, because it's worth it just to see, actually visually see the interaction between Austin and Vince and Vince's facial reactions to some of the questions. You don't get the same dynamic, I think, if you just listen to it. I thought it was great. You know, they touched on a lot of different subjects from millennials, which apparently Vince is not a fan of, and we're not ambitious enough. Cesaro, who he all but buried on this podcast, and I don't want to hear from people, well, he was trying to motivate Cesaro, just like he was trying to motivate the roster. No, he buried them. Cesaro, he talked about Punk. This is before all the UFC news broke. Randy Savage, I guess one of the bigger pieces of news to come out of it is that he confirmed Savage is absolutely going to go into the Hall of Fame. Didn't say when, probably going to happen next year. So there was a lot of ground that they covered, and Austin, he shied away from some stuff. He didn't follow up when he should have on a handful of questions, but I thought overall he did a bang-up job, and I did a full hour-long review of the thing from start to finish. It's up on our YouTube channel. It's got closing in now on 18,000 views, so go ahead and check that out if you haven't already done so. Just to stay on the Punk subject just for a little bit longer, he did part two with Colt Cabana on The Art of Wrestling this past week. They were supposed to be answering fan questions. I guess the fans crashed the email address, so they didn't really spend very much time at all answering fan questions. But I still thought it was I don't want to say it was better than part one, because I thought part one was more intriguing with the backstage stuff and all that, but it was actually really, it was really good. It was an easy listen. Punk said that he didn't want to hear that it was a coincidence that the lawyers did not talk to talent relations, and so that's why he got his termination papers on his wedding day. He made it very clear he spoke to Triple H on June 11th, and on June 13th he received a FedEx overnight with a document that was dated June 12th. Now, I know there was a lot of wrestlers who were also cut, I think, on that date. There was like a mass firing, and on WWE.com they had a list of all these different people who were released. Punk was not one of those people. So he was not part of that list. Look, I'm with Punk on this. You got to have your head in the clouds to think that this was just a coincidence. I tried to give Vince the benefit of the doubt when I talked about this, I think, last week, and said, okay, maybe Vince didn't know, but certainly Triple H must have known. At the end of the day, I think Vince probably did know. Triple H knew for sure. This was not a coincidence, people. This was not a coincidence. And he also mentioned, you know, AJ had asked for that time off so she could get married and go on her honeymoon. And then the week after the honeymoon, she was already back on TV. So he doesn't want to hear it was a coincidence, and neither do I. It was not a coincidence. It was a very calculated move that blew up in their face, and now CM Punk is in UFC. And he's going to use a lot of that notoriety and all of his fame that he built up in WWE on Vince McMahon's watch to make money for Dana White and UFC. And you know what? That's on Vince McMahon. That's his fault. On Vince's apology, Punk said if it was a sincere apology, then he wouldn't have used it as a publicity stunt. That was the first he heard of Vince apologizing to him, and it was in front of the camera on the network. He says, you have my phone number, you have my address, you can show up when you're a 10-minute drive from my house, and apologize to me like a man. So that was his position on that. He said he was sick and tired of being sick and hurt, he was burnt out, and he walked, and he said, I can do that because I'm an independent contractor. He said their contracts with their non-competes are not worth the paper they're printed on. And the fact is, he's been proven right multiple times. Look at Brock Lesnar. Look at Alberto Del Rio. They had non-competes too, and at the end of the day, they were able to go work somewhere else without being punished, because the whole thing is nonsense. And I posted on my Twitter on Thursday night, so go back to my Twitter on Thursday night, or just do a Google search. Somebody had sent me a link to a blog that was done by this law firm, Strasburger and Price, I believe the name of it is, and it was from last year, and the title of the blog is, No, 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 Your Independent Contractor Cannot Sign a Non-Compete, Never, Ever. This was written by a law firm. Find that piece. It is well worth reading, and it just goes to the heart of why this whole independent contractor label in WWE is such a farce. And I think it might have been Robert on my Facebook page who posted kind of a rebuttal where he pointed out that WWE provides catering for their wrestlers, and they do provide for some transportation, and there's a lot of things they do. Nobody is ignoring the fact that WWE does all of those things. I said this last week on my podcast. WWE pays for their airfare, but the wrestlers are responsible for their rental cars and their hotels. They do provide for catering. Absolutely. There are things that they do. Nobody is hiding that. That's not a big secret. But that doesn't change the fact that the classification of what these guys are is just, it's wrong. It's flat out wrong. It doesn't change that. Nothing changes. It's a farce. You got to read that blog. I mean, you look at that headline, and it really jumps out at you. Punk said he was suspended. Nobody contacted him to tell him he was unsuspended and to say, hey, okay, we want you back at TV. And I thought this was interesting. He said, maybe in 2 months, I'd be feeling better by that point, or I'd have come to my senses, but nobody ever found out because nobody ever reached out. That tells me, when I hear him say that, that there was a very good chance he would have come back had Vince reached out to him around that time. Now, he walked out on them, so I get it if they didn't immediately pick up the phone and call the guy and grovel for him to come back. Maybe they shouldn't have. If that were me and the guy walked out on me, I don't know that I would have been getting down to my hands and knees ready to, blow him. But they should have apologized for nearly working him to death. Literally to death on the staph infection thing. Because that, to me, is the most inexcusable part of this whole story. Wrestlers get beat up. They're hurt all the time. Punk is hardly the only guy. I don't really have a lot of sympathy for him, just having injuries in general. But the staph infection story, and it makes total sense to me that he ended up getting everything that he wanted to, and he didn't have to sign a non-disparage agreement, and they threw out the non-compete. Think of everything this guy got. Think of why he is now in the UFC. Less than a year after walking out on Vince McMahon, after walking out on his contract, how do you think this guy is allowed to walk around and publicly trash the company and sign a deal with their competitor? I don't give a shit what Vince McMahon says. UFC is absolutely a competitor. They're more of a competitor to them than TNA is. Why do you think Punk was allowed to do all of these things if what he was saying on the podcast with Cabana was complete lies? I mean, think about this for a second, people. Use your brain. Use common sense. The medical stuff is probably what tipped the scales in his favor. I absolutely believe the story about the staph infection. And to me, he was at least owed an apology for that, because that is inexcusable. And the fact that the doctor is still working, they didn't get rid of him, he's still there, he's still treating other wrestlers, that's a scary thing. How does something like that go unnoticed for so long? I would think he would at least be owed an apology for that. Maybe Vince didn't know. Again, I find all of that very hard to believe. For walking out on them, I kind of get that. That the guy would feel he's owed an apology, yet he walked out on them. That, to me, I can understand them not coming back to Punk and groveling. On the medical stuff, though, that's a whole other ballgame. But that, to me, is what was most interesting about this, is that he would probably be in WWE right now. Right now, had they just reached out and apologized, at least for the medical stuff. It sounds like at that point, he had not completely shut the door on a return. Now, of course, he's in UFC, but back then, they still had a shot. And that, to me, was the most intriguing thing. Now, just to wrap the Punk stuff up, and then we'll move on, he told some stories as well about other opportunities. He went into, on the first Cabana podcast, opportunities that he had to make more money and maybe bring some more notoriety to the company and up his own profile that Vince shot down. And in a lot of cases, not only did they shoot him down, they gave those opportunities to other people, like John Cena and Randy Orton. So here he gave a few more examples. He shared a story about Wizard World, because Punk is a big comic book fan. It makes sense that he would, be doing something at an event like Wizard World. So he had gotten an offer to appear at Wizard World for a panel. They were going to pay him $20,000 for about 4 hours worth of work. He went to the office first, like a good little soldier, to let them know and to get it cleared. And they not only said no to letting Punk do it, they sent other people, including John Cena, in his place. He had a friend, another example, who worked on the reality show LA Inc. And they wanted to feature Punk on the show. Punk, obviously, is a big tattoo guy. He told the office, and they said, no, you don't want Punk. You want Randy Orton, who had just gotten, I guess, his tattoo sleeves done maybe a few months before. The Slim Jim. The Slim Jim story is the one that probably aggravated me the most listening to it. Slim Jim wanted Punk to be the new face of their brand like Randy Savage used to be. That's a big endorsement. Not just for the company, but for the person who's in that position. And I think actually when Savage left WWE, he took the Slim Jim sponsorship with him, which may have been another reason why Vince was not happy with him. Punk's a huge fan of Randy Savage, emulates him, uses moves. He's dressed up using, you know, Savage's old tights on occasion. He's a big Randy Savage fan. Who isn't? And that could have meant big money for him and big money for the company as well. So he had a meeting with the president of Slim Jim. They gave him all these Slim Jims to take home with him that day. He was so happy. They even went over creative for the commercial they were going to work on. He would play this camp counselor in the commercial. And he tells WWE, and so what do? They give it instead to Rey Mysterio, Big Show, and Eve Torres. And the campaign was such a big hit, I barely remember it. That infuriated me just listening to it. Out of all the stuff he talked about on the second show, that is what pissed me off the most listening to it. It's obvious that no matter how popular you may be, if you don't fit the image of what they're looking for, if you're not already the tippy-top guy there, you're not going to get the same opportunities as other people. And Punk was a big, big star. He was the closest, I think, that they ever came to creating a new star on the level of a John Cena. Nobody has ever gotten at that level yet. Not Orton, not Daniel Bryan, not even Punk. He was almost there. He was the closest thing they had. And if they're doing this to a guy like him, then what chance does somebody like a Daniel Bryan or Dean Ambrose or somebody like that have? If let's say they get opportunities like this, you think the company's going to give it to them, or are they going to give it to John Cena? Are they going to give it to Randy Orton? You're just not going to get the same opportunities as those other people. And it's their company, so they can do what they want, although it is a publicly traded company now, so they have shareholders to answer to. But it really makes Vince McMahon look like a fool when he says, nobody has tried to reach for that brass ring since John Cena, while completely ignoring a guy like Punk, or a guy like a Bryan, or Dolph Ziggler. Okay? It's disingenuous, and he's full of shit. So that's the end of the CM Punk stuff for now. I wanted to just get that out of the way here. That was the key stuff I wanted to cover. Let's talk about New Japan for a few minutes here. New Japan, lost in all of this Punk news this week, launched its own streaming service, its own version essentially of the WWE Network called New Japan World. You can head over to njpwworld.com. The website is only in Japanese right now. You can probably translate it depending on what web browser you're using. I haven't had a chance. I was actually hoping to sign up for it. I just have been so busy and so slammed this week. I have not even had a chance to look at the webpage, let alone sign up for it. I think I will end up signing up for it because I like the New Japan product and being given access to all of the newer shows plus their own archive library. And it sounds like they have a lot of stuff already up. That sounds very intriguing to me. The price, this is funny. The price is 999 yen per month, which is just, I think that's hilarious. I only hope this doesn't mean we're going to have to sit through Jim Ross doing 999 plugs on the January 4th Tokyo Dome show now. With the conversion rate, it comes to about $8.45 US. So it's actually cheaper in this country than the WWE Network is. You get every major show. Every major show will air live, 11 shows total between the months of December and January alone, including Wrestle Kingdom 9 from the Tokyo Dome on January 4th. Now, my understanding is that on the network here, it will be the Japanese commentary only, and if you want to hear Jim Ross, you will need to buy the actual pay-per-view. Truth be told, I'm buying the pay-per-view anyway because I'd like to have the option at least to flip between the Japanese and the American commentary. I want to hear how JR does. And also, for the same reasons that I suggested to all of you around WrestleMania time this year, that you buy WrestleMania on pay-per-view and not on the network, this thing is still new. You don't know how the stream is going to hold up for such a big show, and this is their WrestleMania. So I just think it's safer to get the pay-per-view. And I want the pay-per-view to do well, as you know, also, because that means that there would be more pay-per-views in the future, which is just good for the company. So there's that aspect of it also, trying to, you know, be a good fan. But I just don't trust the stream for such a big show like this. It's a brand new service. I just think it's smarter to get the pay-per-view. But you don't have to do that if you don't want to. You do now have the option of just paying $8.45 for basically their WrestleMania. This also means the annual G1 Climax tournament is going to be airing on their network as well, which is awesome. That's some of the best wrestling you will ever see. You can actually sign up and go back and watch all of those G1 matches from this year's tournament. They were incredible. I talked about some of them on the podcast. I think the AJ Styles Minoru Suzuki match was part of the G1. Just one incredible match after the other, night after night after night. One of the greatest tournaments in the history of pro wrestling, period. And now you have access to all those matches. They have matches going back as far as 1973, from what I've read. Matches, not necessarily full shows that go back that far. But they already have a ton of content up. They have documentaries up for some of the bigger matches in New Japan history that give you some background on them, which I think is really cool. The head of New Japan talked about how he believes they are the number two wrestling promotion in the world right now in terms of business, which is true, but he believes they are number one as far as wrestling is concerned. That's also probably true. Their goal, he says, is to surpass WWE in terms of business and be number one all around. It's nice to set goals for yourself and want to be number one, but I hope they're not just doing this to compete with WWE in this country, because if that's the case, that will not end well. They have a good thing going right now. Do what you feel, I guess, you have to do to grow the brand, but don't copy all of WWE's business moves, because I'm not sure WWE has made all of the best business decisions this year, and they can at least sustain the losses when they make those bad decisions. I don't know if New Japan can. That's kind of the difference there. WWE has made so much money for so many years that even if they lose their ass on this network and it doesn't work out, I don't think it'll bankrupt the company. They'll take a huge hit, but they can sustain that. New Japan is doing very well. I think they've doubled their revenue in the last 2 years. But if they launch this thing and they're going to kill their iPay-per-view business, they're going to just kill pay-per-view altogether for them, and it doesn't work out, because God knows the WWE network has not paid off for them yet, I don't know that New Japan can sustain those kinds of losses. And I would hate to read that they took a risk, it didn't pay off, and now they're doing badly, and they can't sign talent, or they're shedding talent, and all of a sudden the dominoes start to fall. I hope that does not happen here. So we'll see. But I definitely am interested in signing up for the service sometime in the next few weeks. I plan to do so, I just have not had any time to even think about it. Monday Night Raw from this past Monday was from Tulsa, Oklahoma. The Austin McMahon podcast on the network, I said, was excellent. It was the 3 hours that built up to it that was brutal to sit through. This was a boring show. This was a boring 3 hours of, I guess as Vince would say, sports entertainment. I was not thoroughly entertained. Not much else to really say about it. I don't even want to spend too much time talking about it, because nothing of any great substance happened on this show. I don't know that I have seen, for example, a more pointless opening 15 minutes to a show than I have with that John Cena-Seth Rollins promo on Monday night. Until the anonymous Raw general manager dinged in, they had nothing. Nothing. Nothing to say. They were just out there, their mouths were moving. I don't remember what they were saying, but it was a whole lot of nothing. And by the way, with no payoff to the anonymous GM stuff on Monday night, because I don't think they didn't talk about who it is or anything like that, sure looks to me like it may be around for more than just 1 week. And if it is, then this company needs to fuck off, because nobody wants to see that shit. It's a tired, lazy gimmick that adds nothing to the show. The laptop said that John Cena and Seth Rollins will have a tables match at TLC, and if Cena loses, he loses his title shot against Brock Lesnar. I'm holding out hope that Randy Orton returns and costs Cena the match, and he ends up with the title shot himself. But why would he help Seth Rollins? I understand it doesn't make any sense. Plus, the authority isn't there anymore to make him the number one contender, even if he does cost Cena the match. So it really does not make any sense at all. It would make more sense for him to, let's say, show up and cost Seth Rollins the match, since Seth Rollins was the one who injured him, put him out of action, so he can go make a movie. And then that sets up a match between Rollins and Orton, so that probably is what will end up happening at TLC, but you know, I think I'm so desperate for anything but another John Cena Brock Lesnar match. I'm willing to almost take common sense and logic, like WWE does on a weekly basis, and kind of throw it out the window. But I do admit, Orton interfering and helping Cena win actually makes more sense than it does for him to interfere and help Rollins win. So I think it's full speed ahead on Cena-Lesnar. Somebody had a sign at the show that said, "Can someone check my staph infection?" I thought that was fucking hilarious. And it got on camera a few times before they took it away from the guy, so kudos to him. The Usos won a tag team turmoil match that also featured Golden Stardust, The New Day, Tyson Kidd and Cesaro, and Adam Rose and Bugs Bunny to get a title match with Miz and Mizdow at TLC. Yes, this was The New Day's Raw debut, for those of you keeping score, and in only their second match together on television as a unit on the main shows, because they had their actual debut was on SmackDown, and that should tell you something right there about what they think of these guys. In their second match together, they lost. It's just a different time. It's just a different time. You know, in the era of squash matches, and I know that era's been gone for a good 15, 20 years now, but in that era, these guys, if they came along, they would be on television. They would win matches every single week. They would get their moves over. They would get their act over until their very first program, and then they would actually meet somebody that has a name on the roster, and then hopefully they would win there as well, but at least they would have a few weeks of wins or a month of wins under their belt before they get beaten down. Now, with TV being what it is, you take a new act and you put them against a credible opponent in his very first match, and then when he doesn't win, you wonder why the guy doesn't get over. That's just how it is. That's wrestling in 2014. What can I say? I could get behind a Tyson Kidd Cesaro tag team, by the way. I don't want to no-sell that combination. When I heard they were going to be a team, my ears perked up. I was like, oh, this could be interesting. Talk about two of the more underrated guys on that roster. If they're not going to really do anything meaningful with them on Raw and SmackDown, I would be all for putting them together as a tag team. We learned that Eric Rowan is apparently a Mensa member and has an IQ of 150. Well, that would be about 140 points higher than the IQ of the people writing their show on most weeks. If Rowan's so smart, get him on the damn creative team. That's what I say. Big Show and Rowan were supposed to have a match, but Big Show hit him with the steel ring step, so it never happened. We have since learned that they will have a stairs match at TLC, which is no longer TLC, by the way. It has now been renamed, at least for this year, TLCS. Yes, they have changed the name of the pay-per-view to Tables, Ladders and Chairs, and Stairs. And since we're rhyming, how about Who Cares? How's that? Dr. Seuss would be impressed. The Swagger Rusev stuff is continuing. I wasn't sure if they were going to just keep it to a one-week thing or if this was going to be a full-blown feud. It sure looks like a full-blown feud to me. Probably going to have a U.S. title match at TLC. Zeb got taken out on this show backstage by Rusev, even though we never actually saw the attack. I cannot believe they have nobody else to fight Rusev and have to go back to the guy he already squashed a dozen times. This is the problem with WWE. We see the same shit over and over and over again. I just said Brock Lesnar and John Cena. Do we really need, at this point, to see another match between them? At some point down the road, fine, I get it, okay? Because in their recent matches, they're one apiece, in effect, right? Cena got slaughtered at SummerSlam. He had victory in his grasp if it wasn't for Seth Rollins at Night of Champions, so you have a rubber match. Now is not the time to be doing that match, although I guess if they think Brock is leaving, fine. But they've known for months that they were going to do this match, and I don't even know that they know at this point if Brock is sticking around or not. So this was the match they were going to do no matter what, and with so many other guys, or even just a handful of other guys, reasonably, that you can plug in there with Brock, Randy Orton being the first thing that pops into my head, but even a guy like Dolph Ziggler, look at the momentum he's got right now. You don't think that if you tried to bridge the gap between now and WrestleMania, you just had to give Brock a match. It doesn't matter against who. Put him in there with somebody that the fans can get behind, and then Brock beats him and goes on to WrestleMania. Dolph Ziggler, with the momentum that he has built up over the last few weeks since Survivor Series, would be perfect in that role. And the fans would be hanging on every near fall in that fucking match. He could bump around like a beast for Brock. And Brock, by the way, is no slouch when it comes to bumping either. For a guy that big, he bumps around pretty good. I think those two could go in there and have a great match. They completely dropped the ball on the Cesaro idea I pitched months ago. So that's out the window. But a guy like Orton, a guy like Ziggler, Either one of those matches to me would have so much more appeal, infinitely more appeal as a Royal Rumble title match. And again, it doesn't matter what the title match is because the Rumble is sold on the Rumble itself, but that'd be a hell of a double main event. But they can't do it. We got to go back to the same old tired John Cena, Brock Lesnar stuff. And here's a lesser example of it. We saw Swagger and Rusev feud for months going back in the summer. And Swagger, for the first time in his career, was over big time as a singles guy. He was over as the Real Americans. Him and Cesaro got over, and then they broke him up. That's what they do when you get over. But as a singles guy, he has never been more over than he was in the summertime. And a lot of that had to do with the Rusev character. It's easy to boo. USA, USA, you know, okay, fine. People were more into that than Swagger himself, as we now see, because he comes out to crickets on Raw every single week. Part of that is the fact that he got beaten so many frickin' times, he's a loser. And how many times do we have to listen to JBL on commentary? He's a loser. He's a loser. He let down his country. He's a loser. So now he comes out, and on most weeks, people don't care. I guess they kind of got into the pull-apart brawl they had here. But to me, we had the feud. They had lots of different matches, none of which Swagger won. And you mean to tell me that now you're going to go back to that well again? There's nobody else you can think of to plug into that spot. There's no other mid-carder on the roster. Somebody from the New Day. Somebody that you can plug in there to go one-on-one with Rusev. There's nobody. There's nobody. You couldn't turn Cesaro, even, which they should have done at least a month ago, and put him in there with a guy like Rusev? Would that not have made for at least an interesting, unique match? It's mind-boggling to me. And they wonder why people don't care. They wonder why the product is just stagnant and people are just so apathetic. That's the general attitude that people have right now. And a lot of that has to do with the constant rematches of matches that we don't want to see. So I'm getting very upset about this, probably more than I should, but the Swagger Rusev thing is the sign of a much bigger problem in this company and one of the reasons why they're in the fucking rut that they're in right now. So I just had to get that off my chest. I'm not a fan of going back to this. They may have a good match, but to me it doesn't matter. It's played out. It's old news. The best part of the show came, I shit you not, during a match between Damian Mizdow and Fernando of Los Matadores. Miz was on commentary for this. He had earlier in the night Proposition Naomi backstage, who they're now acknowledging is Jimmy Uso's wife. Okay, I know they've acknowledged that on Total Divas forever, but this is the first time, to my knowledge, on Raw that they're openly acknowledging this. And during the Usos match earlier, they showed Naomi watching on a monitor backstage, so they've established that. Miz came over to her and gave her a card and said, hey, you know, I can give you a hookup in Hollywood. And he's trying to, like, rub up to her. So Miz is flapping his gums now on commentary in this match, when all of a sudden, in the middle of the match, Jimmy Uso storms down to the ring, walks right up to the Miz, and slaps him hard across the face. Just knocked him right out of his chair. Jimmy was totally serious throughout the whole thing. He told Miz, stay away from my wife. Then Jay came out, grabbed his brother, brought him to the back. Jimmy was awesome here. Miz sold it great. It felt real. It was a playoff real life. You don't fuck with another man's wife. That's why it worked. The slap was great too. But the realism, that's why it worked. I mean, wow, what a concept. Imagine that. Realism in wrestling proves to be more effective than bulls and bunnies. Who the fuck knew? Bray Wyatt squashed R-Truth, cut a promo on Dean Ambrose after the match. Ambrose came out and attacked him, then destroyed Bray's rocking chair. And Bray, who usually just laughs and smiles and generally no-sells his opponents doing anything to him, for the first time looked like he was about to cry. He showed real emotion, like he was bothered by this. So on SmackDown, they did a major injury angle with Bray. He put a chair to Dean's throat, smashed it into his throat. Dean did a stretcher job. I think they're claiming he may have a crushed trachea. Triple H knows all about that. I think these two are going to have a killer match at TLC. I just have that feeling. They're both brawlers. They're in a weapons match. They have lots of toys to play with. I think it will probably steal the show. Then again, Dolph Ziggler and Luke Harper are having a ladder match, so they may have some competition. But I have high hopes for this match. The fans voted Naomi as AJ Lee's partner against the Bella Twins, and AJ got Nikki to tap out to the Black Widow for the win. The whole Cyber Monday deal, by the way, that the anonymous Raw GM mentioned the week before, apparently meant one app vote for a 3-minute Divas tag match. Fail. Main event, John Cena, Dolph Ziggler, and
dumb as fuck,
beat Seth Rollins, Kane, and Luke Harper. Ziggler pin Harper, long match. That sets up their ladder match for the Intercontinental title at TLC. Big Show ran down to help out the babyfaces until Eric Rowan came out. He got revenge for earlier. He laid out Big Show with the steel steps that Show had used on him. And that's how he went off the air. Hell of a last 10 days for Dolph Ziggler, so that's nice to see. I'm happy for him. The positioning of the ad breaks on the show was inexcusable. I know it's a three-hour show. They have to take commercials. I get that. But to just randomly cut to black in the middle of multiple matches without warning, over and over and over again, it's inexcusable. So whoever is responsible for deciding when to take ad breaks during the show, they need to be reassigned to janitorial duty this week. Now, the Slammy Awards are this week. They're hosted by Seth Green, who is one of the first Raw guest hosts when this horrible gimmick started about 5 years ago. So here are the categories. We have Superstar of the Year as the main category. And I'm not going through every single one here. I'm just going through some of the main categories, like the top two or three. Superstar of the Year. Nominees are Brock Lesnar, Dean Ambrose, John Cena, Seth Rollins, Daniel Bryan, Bray Wyatt, and Roman Reigns. Superstar of the Year, as far as I'm concerned, it's an easy choice. Kayfabe, if we're talking kayfabe in character stuff here, which I think this whole thing is. Superstar of the Year is a no-brainer. It's Brock Lesnar. He broke the streak and won the Unified World Heavyweight Championship and did so in dominant fashion. Nobody has ever seen John Cena dominated that way. Nobody has ever seen The Undertaker lose a match at WrestleMania. This guy did both. And now is the WWE champion and will be into 2015. And you can say what you want to about how underwhelming his reign has been thus far, how badly he's been booked or any of that stuff. But that doesn't change the fact that if we're just looking at Brock Lesnar, the character here, nobody had a better 2014 than this guy did. So he's the Superstar of the Year. Now, if we're really talking about who the Superstar of the Year should be in terms of how their profile has been upped and their worth and their value to the company, I think you have to go with Seth Rollins. I mean, the guy, you know, he was the catalyst for the whole Shield turn angle, right? They went with him. They decided this is the guy we're going to go with, not Reigns and not Ambrose, as our top heel. And that is what Seth Rollins has become in the last 6 months. He has been the top heel in WWE. And you can argue Randy Orton for a period there, but really it's been Seth Rollins. And Rollins has been relied upon, I think, even a little too much. I feel like he's probably on the show a lot more than he should be, to the point of overexposure. But he has had himself a hell of a 2014, and he's an awesome wrestler. So when he's in there having matches, he's having kick-ass matches every single week. And he's bumping around. I mean, he's awesome. Seth Rollins is great. Seth Rollins is going to be one of their top stars for years to come. And I think the real money is in him as a babyface. Just like I think in Ambrose, the real money in him is as a heel. So these guys are only scratching the surface with what they're able to do. So to me, Brock is the Superstar of the Year. Again, kayfabe Superstar of the Year. But the real star, I think, is Seth Rollins. And so help me God, if John Cena wins this category, I don't even know what to say. What is there to say? There's no way John Cena is winning this. There's just no way. It's not going to happen. Match of the Year. These are the nominees. Daniel Bryan, Batista, and Randy Orton. Triple threat match at WrestleMania 30. Shield and Evolution. Six-man tag at Extreme Rules. John Cena versus Bray Wyatt. Last man standing match at Payback. And the Team Cena versus Team Authority match at Survivor Series. Now, I thought Team Cena versus Team Authority was an excellent match. Really enjoyed it. I thought the triple threat match at WrestleMania with Bryan, Batista, and Orton was also excellent. And I am no fan of having multiple man matches as a WrestleMania main event. This year it worked because of the Bryan story. People wanted to see him in that match. The match was infinitely better than it would have been if they would have kept it as Batista versus Orton, which would have been a disaster, especially coming off the Undertaker-Brock match. If you go back and watch that main event, I mean, the crowd was completely dead for the Divas match, and they had every Diva on the roster out there. But the main event also didn't have a lot of heat in the early going, and they really had to work hard to get the people back into it because I think people were still hung over from the Undertaker match. I think they were still in a state of either shock or anger over the fact that the streak had been broken. But these guys, to their credit, they went out there, and the people, I'm sure, badly wanted to chant, you know, Batista and all this stuff. By the end of that match, right before the finish, when Batista was setting Randy up for the powerbomb, the Batista bomb, that's when the crowds finally started a "This is awesome" chant. Like, it was actually a great match. I think it's worthy of being on the list. It's not the match of the year. The other matches that are on here, Shield and Evolution, that was also good. Cena Wyatt, was probably the best of the series they had. That should not be on this list. The match of the year, last year they gave it to Rock versus Cena 2 over the Undertaker CM Punk match, which was a bunch of shit. Really, any Shield six-man tag match on television last year was better, was a better choice than Rock versus Cena at WrestleMania. I would have to say my favorite WWE match of 2014, and I can't believe it's not even in consideration, which is why this whole thing is just a freaking hoax, is, if we're not counting NXT, is the Shield and the Wyatts at the Elimination Chamber. And I think they ended up having three. Was it three matches this year? Because I think they also had a match on Raw in Chicago in March. But that first match between the Shield and the Wyatt family at the Elimination Chamber in February got me so amped up, the way that very few WWE matches are able to these days. They really hit on something with that feud, and they blew it off way too quickly, and then they broke up both groups. It's unfathomable to me to think that here we are, the year isn't even over yet, look how over that whole thing was, and now the Shield and the Wyatt family don't even exist anymore. They're not even a thing. That is unbelievable. But that, to me, is the match of the year. Hands down, match of the year. Daniel Bryan against Bray Wyatt, the opening match at the Royal Rumble. How that's not on the list, I'll never know. That's worth a mention. That was an awesome match. Charlotte and Natalya, if we are going to talk about NXT, they had a match at NXT TakeOver earlier in the year. That was maybe the best women's match all year in WWE. The four-way from the last NXT special with Adrian Neville, Sami Zayn, Tyler Breeze, and Tyson Kidd. That would also be on my list. Those are the ones that come to mind. But if we're talking WWE match of the year, hands down, no question about it, it's the Shield and the Wyatts from the Elimination Chamber. That's it. Period. End of story. And it's not even under consideration on their list. Diva of the year. And we'll wrap up with this. The nominees they have listed are AJ Lee, Paige, Nikki Bella, and Brie Bella. So a nice fuck you to the rest of the Divas roster. I thought Natalya actually had a really nice year. They didn't even put Alicia Fox on there. I figured maybe they'd throw her in there since they actually decided to do something with her for a change. And then they stopped doing the whole crazy gimmick. Because, I mean, realistically, that crazy gimmick she was doing was only going to last for so long anyway. But those are the only four that are on the list. And the Diva of the Year, my opinion, it's a tie between Paige and AJ Lee. AJ is still the best promo in the Divas division. I think she's better than some of the guys on the roster when it comes to promos. She started out the year as the Divas Champion, held on to her title in a multiple-woman match at WrestleMania. She did take a few months off, but she came right back and won the championship again, and she's been fighting for it off and on ever since with Paige. Paige had that great match with Emma at NXT Arrival in February, then had a hot debut on the main roster the night after WrestleMania on Raw, beat AJ on her first night in to become the champion. First night in, became the Divas Champion, held both the Divas title and the NXT women's title simultaneously until they stripped her of the NXT title. And she's gone back and forth with AJ for the title ever since. And aside from maybe Lana, clearly Paige attracts the creepiest tweets and Facebook posts and Instagram comments of any of the Divas on the entire roster. Just look at our Facebook group. I don't know if that qualifies her alone for a Slammy Award, but she's obviously built up quite the following in her first year on the roster. And her verbal skills also deserve mention as well, I think. I still think AJ is the best talker of all the women, but Paige is no slouch herself. So it's hard for me to pick one over the other. You know, Paige, it was her first year. She made a great impression. It'd be easy to say her. But AJ had an awesome year, too. So to me, it's a tie between the two of them. I can't really put one over the other. And they're doing other awards. They're doing Tag Team of the Year and Rivalry of the Year and LOL Moment of the Year and all that nonsense. Those are the three main ones that were worth mentioning. Superstar of the Year, Match of the Year, and Diva of the Year. And those would be my picks. One last note here before we move on. I have to mention this. WWE sent out one of their fan council surveys. If you're on their email list, don't ask me how to get on it. I have people who... I'm not on it either, but people will email me when they get these surveys with some of these unbelievable questions. And in this survey, they were asking for feedback on various match stipulations. Which ones do you like? Which ones do you not like? And they listed, I think, every single possible match stipulation they've ever used, including some that they've never used before. One of my listeners, my faithful listeners, sent me the email. And one of the match types is called a substance match. described as a large container filled with various substances is placed in the middle of the ring. That's the description for the match. It doesn't say anything else. It doesn't say you have to scramble for it, what you do with those substances once you get your hands on it. Maybe I don't want to know. As Noah Mark said, maybe it's a container filled with antibiotics. You know, you have to scramble for the Z-Pack. I don't know. Although, if this were the 1980s, you could just fill it with a shit ton of coke and steroids, and it would be fun to watch those guys really beat the piss out of one another trying to get to that container. Substance match. I can't get over that. NXT. This was the go-home show to TakeOver this past Thursday. They announced that there will be a pre-show on the TakeOver special this week. As usual, 30 minutes before showtime. And Corey Graves, remember him? He'll be there to make a special announcement about his career. I said months ago, the belief is that his in-ring career is over due to repeated concussions. And they were thinking about making him an announcer. So I guess we'll see. Hey, if they say his career is over because of concussions, maybe he can go join UFC. Just like CM Punk. We had Charlotte in the opening match beating Mia Yim in a quick matchup before her battle with Sasha Banks at TakeOver. Mia has wrestled for the Shine promotion. She actually teamed with old Blue Pants, who we saw a couple weeks back on NXT. They won the tag team titles together in Shimmer, and Mia won the Shine title. She beat Ivelisse from Lucha Underground at a show in China just last month. That's something that sort of flew under the radar recently. I didn't talk about it on the Sound Off, but WWN, which is World Wrestling Network, just had a very successful tour of China and signed a long-term deal to go back there in the future. So they've done something that WWE, TNA, UFC, and everybody else has not been able to do, which is crack the Chinese market. So I think that's kind of a big deal that a lot of people really aren't talking about. Anyway, this was way too short to get any sort of real impression of Mia Yim, but it's nice to see some new female faces pop up here every now and then. Sasha came out post-match, talked some smack. Bayley walked out on stage with her leg in a brace after last week's attack. Sasha, the great heel that she is, kicked Bayley's leg out from under her. Or as Owen Hart once said to his brother Brett at the Royal Rumble, "I kicked your leg right out of your leg." That's one of my favorite botches. Charlotte ran up the ramp in a fit of rage, grabbed Sasha, carried her to the ring like a child. The whole time she was screaming, "Get me a referee." She got her in the ring. She was about to kick her ass. Becky Lynch ran down for the distraction, and that allowed Sasha to nail the back cracker on Charlotte and pose with the champion's title. I'm feeling like it's Sasha's time. I say she wins the title at TakeOver. She deserves it. That title needs to be on a heel anyway when Bayley gets it, and Bayley should win it from Sasha. We had another vaudeville and silent movie to hype up their tag title match with the Lucha Dragons at TakeOver. This could go either way. They've been giving the vaudevillains a lot of TV time recently, but I'm picking the Lucha Dragons to retain at TakeOver. I think they keep the belts. Vaudevillains then beat Wesley Blake and Buddy Murphy in a warm-up match. They used a new finisher as well. They're calling the Whirly Dervish, which is an uppercut to the back of the head followed by a swinging neck breaker. Kind of cool. I like that better than their other finisher. We get William Regal backstage with Tyler Breeze and Tyson Kidd. He makes a match pitting the two of them against Hideo Itami and Finn Balor. Tyson Kidd then feels up Tyler Breeze's fur vest and says, "That better not be cat fur." I fucking died. My favorite wrestling moment all week. Fucking love this. Bull Dempsey beat some dude real quick. Then Baron Corbin came out. He beat some dude even quicker. So yeah, they're definitely adding this match at the last minute to the TakeOver card. And when they do, Baron Corbin is going over. That is my prediction. We had a new Kevin Owens video. This was excellent. This was even better than the first vignette for the guy. Thursday's the day, people. So get ready. He's coming. There's lots of talk about... by the way, let me just backtrack here. The video, what made it so great, you know, spliced in with this stock footage of him wrestling in the darkness in one of the rings at the Performance Center. They actually went into detail with his history with Seth Rollins and Sami Zayn and, oh God, who was the other guy? Maybe Ambrose. I think Ambrose. Like, a lot of those indie guys that he worked with or was friendly with or knew of from the independent scene, how they kind of came up together. they would show highlights of them wrestling in FCW, in the case of Seth Rollins, or in the case of somebody like Adrian Neville, they showed a still photo of him back in his Pac days wrestling Steen at an indie show like 5 or 6 years ago. So they actually went into detail here about how all these other guys got shots, they got called up before him, and now it's his turn. And I really like that. I like that aspect. And they openly acknowledge that him and Sami Zayn have been best friends for like 10 years, and they showed a photo of them back in their younger days together. So they're already setting something up there with Owens and Zayn. And there's been a lot of talk and speculation, even here, you know, about how maybe Sami Zayn is going to be, you know, screwed over by Kevin Steen when he comes in. Or even maybe Zayn wins, but then they have a stare down afterwards between him and Kevin Owens. I'm starting to think that maybe they'll do something with him, with Owens, that is, and either Tyson Kidd or maybe Tyler Breeze, because it's a crime. Neither one of those guys are even on the show this time, especially after their performance in the four-way on the last TakeOver show. The fact that Tyson Kidd and Tyler Breeze both don't have scheduled matches on the show is ridiculous to me. I know you can't fit everybody in on every show, but at least one of them should have a match on the show. The fact that they don't, you know, makes me think that maybe they come out, or one of them comes out, maybe Tyson and Natty, they're pissed, they don't have a match, they issue an open challenge or something like that, and that's when Steen answers the challenge and just kills him dead. And you know what? That may be the best use for him. You showcase him as a killer right out of the gate. He comes out, he beats the crap out of somebody. Maybe that is the best way to debut Kevin Owens, instead of just having him come out and have a stare down, or, you know, with Sami Zayn or something like that. There's going to be plenty of time to establish something with him and Zayn. If Zayn, let's say, wins the title, which I think he will. So we'll see. But I'm very excited now to see what they do with Steen on his first night in. Speaking of fun, we had Finn Balor and Hideo Itami against Tyson Kidd and Tyler Breeze. Balor and Itami beat them in a real fun tag team match. Double foot stomp off the top rope by Balor to the back of Breeze's head that looked awesome. And then Itami finished off a groggy Tyler Breeze with a kick to the back of the head. Balor's only been around for a few weeks now. He's had like one match. This was his second. And this guy's presence, when he makes his entrance, the entrance itself, from the badass theme music they gave him to the way he jumps off the top rope and they zoom in on his face, the dude is already a star. He's only been around for like a month. You know, he really doesn't even need to be in NXT. None of these guys need to be in NXT. I'm glad they are, but none of them have to be there. After the match was over, Balor got on the mic. He told the Ascension, who they're facing at the TakeOver special, "At TakeOver, you better bring all you got, because I'm bringing something you've never seen before." And the crowd was like, ooh. And my first thought, like probably many of you, is that he's bringing the paint. We're probably going to get the first glimpse of him wearing the body paint at TakeOver. It would make sense to save the body paint for big-time matches, and this is his first big match at one of these live specials. It's kind of like an NXT pay-per-view in a lot of ways. So that's going to be real interesting. I don't know that he can, you know, use body paint for a known character. You know, we've seen him do Marvel characters like Carnage and stuff like that, the Joker. Personally, when I think about that, I don't really know what would be legally wrong with him doing that. If he's just putting paint on his body, I don't see what the big deal would be. But there could be legal issues involved in him doing that, so maybe he won't be imitating a character. Either way, it's going to look badass. It's going to be a lot of fun. Obviously, they're my pick. It would be insanity for the Ascension to go over these two guys in this match. So then we end with an Adrian Neville, Sami Zayn face-to-face in the middle of the ring. Neville explains his actions at TakeOver and says, "I did what I had to do because I can go that extra mile when I have to. When everything is on the line, I can do what I need to do to win and to keep my title. And Sammy, you're too nice. You're too nice to be the NXT champion." So they never really went full heel with Adrian Neville. They never really did anything to indicate that he was a heel. It was the fans that booed him because they're so invested in Sammy. They were pissed at the way he won that last match. And I thought at some point they were going to finally kind of go that extra mile and turn him, and they never did. And I really like what they've done here, in that the fans have kind of turned on Neville, but Neville really hasn't been acting or behaving any differently than he ever has, unless they're going to do the turn at TakeOver, which is certainly possible, you know, in like a a fit of desperation to keep his belt, he does something really evil, but I don't see that happening. So Zane gets on the mic. He says he's sick and tired of listening to Adrian talk about all this stuff. You know, he's talking about him like I'm your little sister or something like that. And Neville goes for a handshake. He's trying to be the bigger man. He says, listen, whatever happens, may the best man win. I respect you. He puts his hand out, and he gets the taste slapped right out of his mouth. I talked about the Jimmy Uso slap on Miz on Raw and how great that was. This was even harder. This was a brutal slap across the face. And the reaction of the live crowd was just awesome. Their mouths are agape. They couldn't believe it. It was a hell of a slap, too. Not as good as the Stephanie McMahon slap to Chris Benoit all those years ago. That is, by far, still, to this day, the most wicked slap I have ever witnessed in WWE. I don't want to throw all those New Japan slaps in there, because those guys really do slap the shit out of each other. But in WWE, in all these years, and it's probably been 14 or 15 years since that segment, I've never seen a more wicked slap than when Stephanie slapped Benoit right across the face. I felt that slap when she did it. And Benoit just totally no-sold it. I don't know how. I would be in tears, balled up in the fetal position on the floor if she hit me as hard as she hit him. But this was a great slap and a great segment. Zayn is screaming now. He says, you don't get to end me at TakeOver. I end you and your reign as NXT champion. I'm taking that title. And then he does like a little Dean Ambrose mic flip, and he walks off. This is how you build to a championship match. This is how you build a sympathetic babyface. There is no way this guy cannot win the title. I am convinced of it now. He is winning the championship. My pick is Sami Zayn, and I say he wins it fair and square. No shenanigans with Kevin Owens or anything like that. Zayn finally wins the big one fair and square, and the NXT arena goes batshit crazy. And it's going to be something to see. I can't wait. I'm just jealous I can't be there live to see it. Thank you guys for taking time out of your day to listen to The Sound Off. I get questions from people asking, how can I support the podcast? Well, the best way to support the show is simple. Just keep listening each and every week. Keep spreading the word about it to friends and family, and retweet or share links to the episodes on Twitter and Facebook. But beyond that, you can contribute by making a PayPal donation or by signing up for a free 30-day trial of the Audible.com service. Making a PayPal donation is simple. Just log on to thesolemonster.com and you'll see the PayPal donation box on the right-hand side of the page. Enter whatever amount you'd like and click the Make a Donation button. That's it. Or sign up for a free Audible trial by entering our custom URL, audibletrial.com/solemonster. From there, you can sign up free for 30 days, which helps us out. You get one free audiobook as part of your trial that you get to keep no matter what. You can browse through their library of over 150,000 titles. Listen to your books at home, on the commute to work, at the gym, whenever, wherever. Sign up at audibletrial.com/solemonster or visit thesolemonster.com to make a donation right now. And thank you for supporting The Sound Off. I'll be heading back to the Manhattan Center for more Impact Wrestling tapings next month. They're doing the three tapings January 7th, 8th, and 9th for their first shows on Destination America. Brian Blade and myself will be going to the Friday night show on the 9th, front row. Looking forward to that a lot. And on the ticket, by the way, it confirms that Impact is staying on Wednesdays on Destination America. I haven't seen that reported or confirmed on any of the big wrestling sites, so I mention it here that it says right on my ticket, Impact Wrestling Wednesday nights on Destination America, so there's your confirmation. Now, I want to mention one more TNA note here before we move on to Lucha Underground, and Dixie Carter has been making the interview rounds this week. One of the places that she talked to was The Independent, and the only thing that really caught my eye was the following quote. I'm going to read you the whole thing, because I think for a company that's about to get a fresh start on a new network, and was putting out pretty good wrestling shows the latter half of the year, you know, the last few months, the wrestling was fine. As a TNA fan, I think this one quote flushes any hope that I may have had right down the commode that anything will ever truly change in this company so long as the current leadership remains in place. And I know they're changing the graphics and the music and the logos, and they're going to put a fresh coat of paint on the whole thing, and they have to, and that's great. But this quote did not give me any confidence at all that anything real is ever going to change in this company. She was asked about Vince Russo and working with him again, and this is what she said. She said, quote, I'm a big Vince Russo fan. I think he's very talented. I think he gets a bad rap, but I feel like the way everything played itself out when I'm negotiating a business deal and it's private, you have to keep certain things confidential, whether it's a new signing or how your creative is going. All things are critical to the right element, and things were getting out concerning his involvement, and it was becoming a distraction. I think he's incredibly talented, I really do, but it's like when you have a football player on your team, and that player is getting a certain amount of attention and distraction. He may be a very good player, but you've got to ask yourself if it's the right thing for where you're at right now, and if you're trying to create a certain kind of locker room of peace. We were right in the middle of very important stuff, and we did not need that. I'm a fan, but it wasn't the time to take it to another level. Vince has worked with us 3 different times, and the one thing I've learned in wrestling is that you never say never, and I will never say never on Vince Russo coming back to TNA. That was straight out of the horse's mouth, the horse in this case, or the horse's ass, being Dixie Carter. And, you know, I read that. I can't say I'm surprised. I just kind of shook my head, and I said, nothing's ever going to change. Nothing's ever going to change. TNA will, it's like the hamster on the wheel, and they're going to be spinning the wheel and spinning the wheel, and nothing will ever change. Because if there's anything this company does not need, it is a return to the way things were before. Whether that's Vince Russo or Eric Bischoff or Bruce Pritchard. And the fact they've gone back to this guy 3 times, and she openly admits she would go back to him for a 4th time. It's mind-boggling to me. And I love how she's talking about how, well, you know, things were getting out. And it could have a negative impact on the negotiations that we were having. Think about what this woman is saying here, okay? It doesn't matter what the fans think of Vince Russo. The fans can, you know, can talk shit about him all they want to. I don't see how that's a distraction to a network executive sitting in their office trying to negotiate a TV deal with TNA. I mean, who gives a fuck who Joe Blow on Twitter, what he has to say about Vince Russo? What that tells me is this guy has such a bad reputation and had such a bad reputation with Spike TV. And we saw all the sniping between the two of them at the end there that was just ridiculous, that they went out of their way to keep his employment there a secret. And then it got out, and of course, they got rid of him, or whatever the final story was. He was no longer in TNA. It was a whole big to-do. But the fact that they even thought that we have to keep this a secret, because if this gets out, that this guy is working for us, this will be a negative for us. This will be a negative for our ability to get a new TV contract. What does that tell you about Vince Russo and his involvement in TNA? That they would even have to do something like that? But does she not understand this? Apparently not. She's loyal to a fault. Good for her. I don't know what else to say. I just wanted to point that out as evidence that nothing will ever change in TNA. And I hope things work out with Destination America and they can get back some of the audience that they're going to be losing, because it's not a strong network, and that they're still around for years to come. But if I had any hope at all that things were really going to change in this company, they got flushed right down the toilet when I read that quote, because nothing will ever change. Unless leadership at the top is gone and replaced by somebody new, nothing will ever change. And that's the story of TNA. Lucha Underground, Episode 6. Let's get happy here, because Lucha Underground is on a roll. They've been putting out great television shows. I'm still a fan. I've watched all 6 shows so far. This one opened with Dario Cueto paying off Big Rick in Cueto's office. I love these Dario Cueto backstage produced vignettes. They're just so well done. He tells Big Rick, job well done last week. That's why he's paying him. He put Prince Puma through a table and won the match to end the show. So I guess Big Rick is getting himself a kickback here. We had Son of Havoc for an in-ring promo with Ivelisse. Ivelisse actually did most of the talking. She was upset at how her man has been portrayed so far and how he's been disrespected, having to wrestle a woman first, then having to wrestle half a man. That's what she called him, half a man, Masquerita Sagrada. I don't know. I mean, I would think the term midget would be less offensive than calling somebody half a man, although apparently people still tell me midget is offensive. I don't care, because people are taking the political correct stuff way too far. I had one person who wrote into me and said, why don't you call, what did he say? Like, why don't you call them, like, vertically challenged or something? Take your vertically challenged and stick it up your ass. I'm calling them midgets. That's what they are. I think calling somebody half a man is far more offensive. I won't call somebody half a man. How about that? But anyway, she insults him. She says, you know, Son of Havoc, he signed a 7-year deal with this company. Which is true, by the way. That's why there were some wrestlers who backed out at the last second, because they didn't want to sign a 7-year deal that they were then committed to. But that's what the network wanted. She says, had they known he would be treated this way, they would have gone to Nashville. And I heard that, and it's just, you know, come on. And here I thought TNA sounded Bush League every time they would mention WWE on their show. When you say you should have gone to TNA instead, that's even worse. That's even worse. Son of Havoc said he wants somebody with balls to come out and fight him. That's when we saw Pimpinella Escarlata for the first time. Pimpinella. I think, is that how you pronounce it? I think that's how you pronounce it. Pimpinella Escarlata. This guy is something else. Apparently in Lucha Libre, he's what you would call an exotico. Or a drag queen, basically. He's an older guy. He's been around for a while. He walks out. He looked like my aunt. The people loved him. Matt Stryker started going through the history of effeminate wrestlers dating back to Gorgeous George, Ricky Starr, The Miz. I laughed when he mentioned that. I love how even other promotions on their own show find a way to bury The Miz. Stryker won me over with that comment. Masquerita Sagrado did a run-in later in the match, chased Eva Lisa around the ring, ran into the ring, then back out of the ring, which resulted in Son of Havoc being kissed by Pimpinella, rolled up for the pin. The most overused finish in all of wrestling. The roll-up. This wasn't a direct distraction roll-up, although they said he was distracted by the kiss. So I guess it was. It was a fucking distraction roll-up. Aside from that, I like this. It's the character, the Pimpinella character, it's unique. I will say that. It was kind of fun to watch, so I enjoyed this for what it was. We find Dario Cueto in the bathroom when Johnny Mundo grabs him, threatens to kick his ass. He wasn't on the toilet or anything like that. He didn't burst into the stall while the guy was, dropping a deuce, although that would have been kind of funny, I guess. But fearing for his life, Cueto offers Mundo $100,000 just if he doesn't hurt him. And then Mundo took a key from Cueto's hand and walked off. I must have missed something because I have no idea what the key was for, although I would imagine it'll come into play at some point, so it's probably important. Next up is local wrestler Famous B against Mil Muertes with Katrina. I'd like to know what's so famous about Famous B, or what the B stands for. I have no idea. Muertes wins with the flatliner, and then post-match, Katrina gives Famous B the lick of death. She licks the faces of his fallen opponents. I'm pretty sure I'd be willing to do the job to Mil Muertes, so long as I get licked by Katrina after the match. That's a fair trade-off, I think. Drago and King Cuerno, the dude with the deer head, are having a rematch tonight, we're told. Drago beat Cuerno in Cuerno's debut match, and then last week, Cuerno, the sore loser that he is, laid out Drago after Drago's match. Drago's the one with the black jelly tongue that completely freaks me out. I guess it's supposed to be like a dragon tongue. They did this awesome video package on the guy, and the history of dragons with this little kid doing the voiceover. Really well done. They had a match, lots of flips and dives, it was pretty fun. Cuerno won with his thrill of the hunt finish, then told an unconscious Drago after the match, "The hunt has just begun." So they're tied at one win apiece. We come back, and Johnny Mundo is already in the ring cutting a promo. Uh-oh. Thankfully, he didn't speak for very long, but what he did was not very good. He gave Cueto 10 seconds to come on out and pay him his 100 grand. What about the key? That's what I kept wondering. What about this key? Big Rick interrupts, starts cutting a promo on Johnny Mundo from the entranceway, then gets wiped out by Johnny Mundo on a dive through the ropes. That was pretty cool. He then resumes his count on Dario Cueto, but out comes Conan. Conan is standing on top of the staircase they have there. He tells Johnny Mundo he needs to give that 100 grand to his boy, Prince Puma, for hitting him in the head, accidentally, mind you, with that steel chair last week. Big Rick, by this point, is back up. He attacks Mundo from behind. Out comes Prince Puma to make the save, even though Conan had told his boy in no uncertain terms, "You are not to help or in any way associate yourself with Johnny Mundo. He's bad news." Apparently, he didn't listen. So after the babyfaces take out all the heels, it's Prince Puma and Johnny Mundo left in the ring, and Puma turns his attention to Mundo. A brawl breaks out between the two of them. Cueto finally comes out of his office. He says the $100,000 belongs to Big Rick, but he didn't read the fine print. I bet most wrestlers probably don't read the fine print on these contracts. He has to earn the money for the signing bonus in a ladder match. So next week, it's going to be Big Rick, Prince Puma, and Johnny Mundo in a three-way ladder match for $100,000. The money will be suspended above the ring. And I will say, even with Big Rick in there, that has the potential to be outstanding. Outstanding. And actually, when you have two guys like Mundo and Puma who fly around and do a lot of spectacular shit, having a big guy, a big plotting guy who really can't do much, like Big Rick, might not be the worst thing in the world. I'm sure they could probably like play off him in some way and maybe come up with some spots creatively that, like a creative use for him being in there. I think this match is going to be awesome. I can't wait. Main event was Sexy Star and Phoenix over Chavo Guerrero and Pentagon Jr. I can't really comment too much on the match because I was watching this match online. Maybe the video I was watching, this match got cut off like in the middle. So I know they won. I know the babyfaces won. I just don't know how. I didn't really see too much of the match. What I saw was fun, but it was only the first like quarter of the match. So from what I saw, I enjoyed the show. It was another good week, and they set up what could be an outstanding match, the ladder match next week. Can't wait to see it. Another thumbs up for Lucha Underground. And if you can find it, whether you have El Rey or if you have Unimas, they have the Spanish language version on Saturdays at 4 o'clock, at least here in New York. Or find it online. There's ways, you know, even on their official channel, they'll take like the match of the week and put it on their channel in HD, which I don't think El Rey is in HD. That might be the best way to go. But definitely give it a shot. I think you might like it. We're not going to do a mailbag this week. I just, the Punk thing really threw me for a loop, and I just had way too much stuff to cover, and I got to get out of here in a few hours to go to the Ring of Honor show, so we're going to skip the mailbag this week. We'll get back to it next week, I promise, so you can keep sending in your questions. I just don't have the time for it this week, and I want to get to one last item before we wrap up, and that is, you know, we talked about Punk joining UFC. There was another story this week of a former wrestler, or soon-to-be former wrestler, I'm sure. If he's smart, he'll get out, who is going on to bigger things outside of wrestling, and that is Dave Bautista. Dave Bautista has officially, there's been rumors about this, but he was officially cast, the announcement was made this week, as a key henchman in the new James Bond movie that's coming out next November. The film is going to be called Spectre, comes out in theaters November 6th, 2015. Christoph Waltz will be playing the lead villain in the film, possibly the character of Blofeld, who was played by the great Donald Pleasance in one of the earlier Bond films, You Only Live Twice. The image of the evil villain sitting there applauding world domination while stroking his cat, and no, that's not a euphemism for masturbation, he literally would sit there stroking his cat. That came from the Blofeld character. And if you don't know who Donald Pleasance is, he played Dr. Loomis in the Halloween films and was fucking awesome at it. But what makes this relevant to this podcast is that Bautista has been cast as the villain's lead henchman named Hinks. Hinks is his name. I think this is fantastic because I think Bautista is actually a really good actor and he's only scratching the surface of what he could be. I was one of the earliest people on a wrestling podcast to praise his acting work after he did that Wrong Side of Town movie with Rob Van Dam. I thought he was very good in House of the Rising Sun, another indie movie he did when he left WWE, and he was the star. He was the lead star of that movie, unlike the RVD movie where it was more of like a bit role. He was the star of this one. I thought his acting in there was actually pretty impressive, and he was hilarious as Drax the Destroyer in Guardians of the Galaxy. And as much as people praised him for that, I still think he is underrated as an actor. Plus, I'm a James Bond fan. So put the two of them together, and this news makes me very happy. Daniel Craig is coming back as Bond for the third time, I believe. Is it fourth time? I think it's the fourth Bond film for him. That's Casino Royale, Quantum of Solace, Skyfall, and then this one. So this would be number four. I love Casino Royale. The opening action sequence at the construction site in that movie I thought was incredible. I loved that film. Quantum of Solace, not as good, but not a bad movie. Skyfall, I was not a fan. I was left disappointed. Now, I have not watched Skyfall since I saw it in the theater the first time, so maybe I'd be kinder to it if I watched it again. But I'm a big fan of Daniel Craig as Bond. He's my second favorite Bond behind Roger Moore. I know it's blasphemy not to mention Sean Connery when you say best Bonds, but I can't really comment on Sean Connery as Bond because I never saw, believe it or not, a full Sean Connery Bond film, and I do count myself a big James Bond fan, I've never seen a full film with him in it as Bond. I mean, that that must be what it's like to grow up with the current like wrestling product and think John Cena is the best wrestler in the world and getting death threats from people for not mentioning Bret Hart or Steve Austin because I didn't grow up on those guys or something like that. You know, my mother was a fan of Roger Moore as James Bond, had all the tapes. So that's what I grew up with. I grew up watching VHS tapes, you know, The Man with the Golden Gun, which was my favorite Roger Moore Bond film. That was the first time I ever realized you could be born with a third nipple. That was quite the shocking development to me as a young kid. Moonraker, The Spy Who Loved Me, Live and Let Die, A View to a Kill, which I think was the last Bond film that Roger Moore did. And one of my favorite titles for a movie of all time, Octopussy. I love how here in the States, we're so sensitive to using bad language on television and certain types of sexual situations. You know, it's not as open as it is, say, in Europe, where stuff like that or a naked woman on TV is like no big deal. You know, because they're actually mature about those things, unlike most Americans. So they're constantly editing stuff so it's appropriate to air here on TV. And, I mean, the radio, oh my God, I mean, it's unbearable to listen to terrestrial radio anymore. Satellite radio is the way to go. They play the same five fucking songs on the radio over and over again all day long, and the songs usually suck. But they'll take a good song on the radio that happens to have bad language or, like, drug references or something like that, and they'll edit the songs to shit so it sounds like like all these like start and stops. You can't hear what the guy is saying. It's like, why even play the damn song if you're going to chop it up like that? You know, they chop it up so much you can't even understand what they're saying. So anyway, the point of all this is I always loved it when they would air Octopussy on TV because there was no way around it. It's the name of the movie. You can't edit it. You can't ignore it. It's not an offensive word. It's Octopussy. It's a completely different word. Only it isn't. And you couldn't help but laugh. So they would have to air it that way, and you just know they hated doing that. But I would look at the listings, and I would see, oh, Octopussy is on tonight, and I would always laugh. But yeah, I'm a Roger Moore guy. There's a t-shirt idea for our store. So good for Big Dave. I'm happy for the guy. This is a big, big role for him. He's had an incredible year, if you think about it. He did the Guardians of the Galaxy movie, which is Marvel. That took off. He goes from getting himself a recurring role in a Marvel franchise, a movie that made like $1 billion worldwide, to being in the next Bond film. And then in between, he's been working on that Kickboxer remake that he's going to be in next year as well. It's a really big deal for him. And if I'm him, especially after how my last run went, I'm leaving WWE in my rearview mirror, and I'm making a name for myself in Hollywood. And the rumor was that when he came back to WWE, whatever agreement he reached with Triple H, he signed a 2-year contract. So as far as I know, he's still technically under contract to WWE, I think for like another year. But even so, I would leave that in my rearview mirror. There must be some kind of clause or an understanding that if his film career takes off, it takes precedent over his wrestling career. Because the good thing about landing big roles like this is that you can call your own shots. He doesn't need WWE. WWE needs him. And Christoph Waltz is fucking amazing. Inglourious Bastards. I mean, come on. You should watch that movie anyway just to see a bunch of Nazis get killed. Any movie where Nazis are blown up to bits as graphically as humanly possible is automatically a great movie in my book. That never gets old. But watch it for the acting that Christoph Waltz does. Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent here. He's in this movie. Batista's in this movie. I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait. Good for Big Dave. I'm happy for him. Don't forget, I'll be on Straight Shoot tomorrow night, Monday night, live immediately after Raw. Go to AubreySitterson.com. It's his podcast. He'll have all the details. He'll have the Google Hangout link if you want to watch live. If not, it'll be archived in MP3 format and on YouTube the day after, so you don't have to stay up late like I am to do this show. But I am looking forward to it. We'll talk about the Slammies. We'll talk about a lot of stuff. We'll agree on some stuff. I'm sure we'll disagree on others, and it'll make for a fun show. So definitely check that out. Also, take time to nominate the Sound Off for Show of the Year in the 2015 Wrestling Radio Awards. I know a lot of you guys have been voting daily. I appreciate that. Keep voting. Get other people to vote. I don't know when the nomination process ends. There's no end date as far as I know. So just keep voting. There could be a few days left. There could be a few weeks left. I just don't know. I was alerted to this, and I'm just having people vote. I don't really know all the details, but go to WrestlingRadioAwards.com. You'll see two fields. Type in the full name of the podcast, Solomonster Sounds Off, because Sound Off can be anything. Put that in the first field. Include our URL, thesolomonster.com. Then in the second field, you need to vote for your favorite interview of the year. You can vote for whatever interview you want to on any podcast. I don't care. I haven't done a lot of interviews because I don't do an interview show. I will interview people when I see fit to interview them. For example, I had a ton of fun interviewing Matthew, the Botchamania guy, for a YouTube extra earlier this year. You should go check it out. It's fun. It was back in March. You want to put that down as your favorite interview? By all means, go ahead. I even technically interviewed Aubrey. I had him on my show. We also did a YouTube extra a couple months ago. I've interviewed wrestlers in the past, but pick any interview from this year that you want. Steve Austin's done a bunch of great ones on his show. Chris Jericho has done a bunch of great ones on his. Put that in the second field. You have to fill that second field out, whatever you put in there. And that's it. You can vote daily and keep telling friends and family to vote as well, and that's it. We'll see how things turn out. So I appreciate your help there. Follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster. I will be live tweeting during Raw this Monday night. I'll be live tweeting tonight during the Ring of Honor show as well, the pay-per-view, as long as I have a good connection. I've never been to this building before, so I have no idea what the connection is like in there. You can follow me also on Facebook, facebook.com/thesolomonster is my profile page. Like our fan page, because if you want access to our private discussion group, you will not get in unless I can see that you've already liked our fan page. So that's how you get access to the group, which is also a lot of fun, a lot of good discussion going on in there. The YouTube channel is on fire. I put a lot of content up there over the last couple of weeks, racking up a lot of views, a lot of comments, and a lot of subscribers. We're now approaching 11,000 subscribers, so if you're not already subscribed, take a moment, go to the YouTube channel, click the subscribe button. I promise you will not regret it. And finally here, Pro Wrestling Tees. As I sit here on Sunday afternoon, the store is down. Not just my store. Every single store on ProWrestlingTees.com is down for maintenance. Why? CM Punk, that's why. As though this guy hasn't fucked with my podcast preparation enough over the last couple of weeks. He also is opening a new store on Pro Wrestling Tees, and he broke the site. So now they have to go ahead and they have to put a new server in. Everything should be back up and running as of Monday morning. So, and I know some of you actually have tried to buy a shirt from our store. The Let Me School You Son shirt is a popular item. And by the way, as you guys start to get your shirts delivered to you, put them on, take a picture, and tweet it to me. I can tweet it out and let everybody else take a look at it. But if you want to buy a shirt in our store, ProWrestlingTees.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff, you can do so again as of Monday morning. The site is down for everybody, not just for us. Thanks to CM Punk, everything should be up and running on Monday morning. So definitely head over there, buy a shirt. That could be a great holiday gift idea for people. If they're a wrestling fan, if you have a friend who's also a Sound Off fan, buy him a shirt. Make for a great holiday gift. ProWrestlingTees.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff. That does it. This is episode 358. We're done here. I have to go get ready for the Ring of Honor show tonight. Final battle. Looking forward to that a lot. We will be back next weekend with TLC predictions. I'll have some thoughts from the Ring of Honor show. I'm sure the next big CM Punk story or three will break. We'll have to talk about that as well. That'll be episode 359. So until then, be well, stay safe. Thank you for your continued support. Have a great week, and we will see you right back here tomorrow night. I'll be on Straight Shooting again for the Sound Off next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster Sounds Off.
If we get another John Cena versus Randy Orton match, so help me God, I will put a voodoo curse on everybody in that company. And if you think I'm joking, just try me. I have my little voodoo doll I bought when I was in New Orleans for WrestleMania. I'm looking at it right now across the room. It's right over there. It's got a white pin for good luck and a black pin for evil. Don't make me go black on your ass.
Since 2007, The Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster Sound Off.